Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. John Copenhaver. He's riding side saddles.
Okay, I guess that's what I'm doing today.
Yeah, partner. Shotgun. How's that? Shotgun.
Through
Oklahoma City, you better be riding shotgun here. You know, it's a rough crowd there. You know, yeah, just like you never know what's going to happen. Let's just get right into it today because we've got an interesting guest, and let's see. Now, the new book is called Hurt for Me, and it's by Heather Levy, and she's here. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Hi. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. So listen, before we get into the book itself, how did you get yourself into this world of writing?
That's a quite a long answer there. I'll be short. I mean, I think like most writers, I've always had an interest in writing from a young age. I remember writing a book to my family. I created a book for my family, and I did illustrations. I loved drawing and art in general as well. That was actually one of my first loves. I thought that was going to be my career path. And when I was in college, struggling through my fine arts degree courses, I was taking a lot of writing courses, and I was also tutoring English and to some foreign students who were going to school. And one of my professors, her name was Professor Celia Kadam at Oklahoma City University. She was the one who kind of put me aside and said, "Hey, I really enjoy your papers, your writing. You know, have you ever thought about going in that direction?" And I was like, "Oh, no, not at all. Like, there's no money in that." So I just put all of that in the back burner. I continued to write, put out short stories. I wrote a lot of poetry, a lot of bad poetry too. Tried to dip my foot in novel writing for you know, quite a few years. And then I was married, had a couple of kids, well, had a divorce in there, that then got remarried, had another child, so two kids. And I had all these half-finished novels that I just could not get through. And I realized I really needed a direction, and more, in my case, I felt like I needed, more education in that area. And that's how I got connected with Oklahoma City University's Red Earth MFA program and author Lou Burney, who was my mentor there. He lived here in Oklahoma City with me, so we used to see each other all the time at, you know, coffee shops, a particular coffee shop, which is now closed down, unfortunately, due to the pandemic. But he really helped me in shaping kind of the writing that I wanted to do, because I had no idea what I was writing. I was working on my thesis, which ended up being Walking Through Needles. I wrote that during my MFA. And he's like, "You know, you're writing crime fiction." And I had no idea. Like, I read widely, but I was not at all very familiar with the crime writing world in general. So I had sort of a crash course through him, and just got into the community. I loved it. And that's kind of where I ended up here. You know, went through Pitch Wars, got an agent through that, had my first book out with Polis Books, and then I'm now with Amazon. So it's a totally different world with them going into, you know, bigger publisher. So I'm learning a lot through that process as well.
That's interesting. You know, was there something that sparked you, but something that gave you the courage to actually decide to publish, but, you know, because you can write, but to actually let other people read it?
I mean, the biggest push that I had really was when my father had died in 2013. He was an artist, an actual visual artist, and had worked at one point doing that. So that's, you know, one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I was trying to pursue fine arts. And he was one of the first people who told me, hey, you're a really good writer. And he didn't understand why I was pursuing art, visual arts. And after he passed, there was just so much in his life that he didn't accomplish, so much that he wanted to accomplish that he didn't pursue for whatever reason, you know, family, whatnot. And I found myself making that same excuse. I've got kids. I have a day job. I don't have time. And that's when I started doing some local community college workshops. And the more I was doing it, I was like, you know, I don't want to end up like my dad. I don't want to end up like all the other people who don't put themselves out there because they're scared, or, you know, I was scared. I was worried that, hey, maybe I'm not that great. But I wanted to be good. I wanted to be great. So yeah, it was just that, it was really just his death and it was the catalyst to really sort of push me forward and not just writing stories and submitting them and publishing them whenever I could, but actually sitting down and saying, hey, this is really what I want to do. I want to tell a longer story, and I want a lot of people to read it.
And so the book Hurt for Me. What's the basic premise behind this book?
It's about Ray Dixon, a single mom who escapes being trafficked as a teen. And with the help of a friend, she rebuilds her life as a professional dominatrix, a business she keeps hidden from both the public and her teen daughter. But when one of her high-end clients goes missing, the lead investigator on the case, Detective Clearwater, digs into her past. Then Ray notices women within her teen community are going missing as well, and she teams up with Detective Clearwater to look into this underground BDSM group of wealthy elites who might be involved. And the more they look into the group, they quickly realize their lives and those of those they love are in mortal danger.
Now, with your main characters like Ray Dixon and Clearwater, the detective, how do you experience these characters? How do you write their dialogue? Do you hear them? Do you see them like a movie, or is it something different?
Yeah, it's definitely full-on movie. I'm one of those people who, whenever I dream, I'm in like vivid color, like it feels very real. I'm one of those people that if I have a dream that, you know, involves something bad with my husband, I will be angry at him the next day. He's like, why, how do I, you know, I have no control over your dreams, that kind of person. So yeah, so I'm definitely hearing their voices. I hear the cadence. I see them. And I'm just trying to do my best as I'm writing to capture those scenes in my head that are playing out. It's almost like watching a movie and then writing it down.
So your husband doesn't let you drive now since you hear these voices and all this, right? You're kept under, lock and key. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's important, you know. How much, which character do you see yourself most as, or do you?
I have to say Ray. I've not experienced the same traumas as Ray, but I've certainly had many traumas in my life that I have, you know, overcome in part because of my sexuality. And with her being a mom, I was a single mom at one point. I know how that feels. I know the difficulty of that and how you have to really surround yourself with people who will support you, people you can trust. And then that process of rebuilding trust with someone I definitely identified with that. And this is the first time I've written a character where I could explore motherhood through the character.
I was just curious about, I mean, I think I'm so fascinated in both your books, but, you know, this one, since we're focusing on it, you're really taking, you know, taking a kink positive approach, an empowering approach. And I mean, I think there's just been, you know, I guess a tradition of, well, guess not taking it that perspective on kink and even how it may be connected to trauma. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we do have a tendency in society to look at kink and through the lens of, you know, pop culture, you know, the 50 Shades, of course. And then, you see a lot of times there are people who are sadists on a show or in a book. And so they're always presented in this very negative light a lot of times. And I find that you see the positivity side of kink a lot of times in romance books, you know, more than anything. And so I wanted to bring that aspect into the crime world and the crime thriller world. But yeah, I'm fascinated with how women in particular process sexual trauma and reclaim their agency through the practice of kink, whether it's on the masochistic end, like with my character in Walking Through Needles, or a dominating position with Ray and her. For me, I feel like there's a whole psychology that hasn't been fully studied, and I know because I tried to find so much research on it, and I mean you find a lot of anecdotal type stories, but I haven't found a lot of strong research that goes into how people can really actually use kink as a form of therapy. Not saying that people should, but I know people who do, and I myself have. That having that trust, that mutual trust with someone through the practice of kink, I think that's a powerful way to rebuild, you know, someone's sexuality, being able to really gain that agency.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I particularly think it's not something that's covered very well in our genre, and so it's so exciting that you are, and because it is often demonized, and I'm a gay writer, and of course, it's a different thing, but it's, you know, we've, you know, gay characters traditionally have been demonized as well in the crime genre. So I think that's really refreshing. Was it ever difficult for you to sort of write that, like, talk about sort of feeling like you may get pushback? Was that ever in your journey to publication a struggle internally or externally, you know, with, you know, rejection and that kind of thing?
For me, because I'm a part of that community, that was the scariest thing, was putting, now I had been pretty open about, you know, being a kinky person before even Walking Through Needles came out, but I didn't realize until I was actually, you know, discussing the book, how I really couldn't separate those two things. I couldn't separate myself. Or I had trouble separating my personal life from, you know, the book itself. So that was the scariest thing, is just it feeling that if someone rejected the book, that they were rejecting that part of me. Yeah, that was the scariest part there.
Just as you're on your road to publishing, you know, was that, were people like, no, we're not gonna represent that kind of book or something like that?
I had so many. It was a rough road trying to find an agent with Walking Through Needles. I mean, you know, it's a dark book. It is a dark book. For me, it's a much easier sell somehow with a dominatrix than that book was, just because of the other aspects. But yeah, it was difficult finding an agent. I love your writing, but I don't know how I'm gonna sell this kind of book. And then I just, you know, I finally found my agent, Sandy, who's amazing. And she's like, there's a place for it. You know, there's a place for every book. in Polis at that time was the best place. You know, they take chances. I think that's kind of how it is in general in the indie world. So whenever it came time for Hurt For Me and we were going out with it, I knew somehow that there was going to be a wider audience for this book, even though it is still dark and even though it is like it's extremely kink heavy, but because there's this sort of almost educational aspect to it and the fun, there was a lightness and a sexiness to it that I felt like it kind of wrapped the kink part of it in a more appetizing way for readers. It was a lot easier to get that out there and get some interest. But even whenever I went on submission with Hurt For Me, there were definitely editors who were coming back with, this is just too much. Like too much on the kink, too much on you know, the sex side of things and whatnot. And of course my agent was like, okay, like she was definitely frustrated on that end. So whenever Amazon was really interested, we were very excited that they were going to take a chance. They were very open to, not only were they open to the book as it was written, but they even wanted me to go like deeper into those steamy scenes, the steamier parts of it. So I was like, okay, yes, I can do that. Yeah. I'm always down.
How are you then with criticism then? You know, because it's a touchy area. So when you get people that respond and look at it like, well, the way you describe it, or you're tying it to trauma, you're tying kink to trauma, and some people don't agree with that, right? So people, I notice there's complaints on that stuff. How do you respond to something like that?
You know, I would say in Ray's case, because it's just how it comes about in her life and who she ends up connecting with, who introduces that life style to her, you know, it's definitely different than from my first book. I would say that everyone has their own lived experience. And just because someone, especially in the kink community, if someone within the kink community has, if they found kink in a different way, and it wasn't through trauma, that doesn't discount how other people are connecting with the book, who very much understand that. I actually just read, my husband reads the good reviews to me. That's for my mental health. I do not read any, you know, negative reviews. I try not to. But he read one to me, and it was someone who was a therapist, someone who works with trauma victims. He said that how it was portrayed was, you know, very accurate, and she appreciated that. And that was what I, two things in this book. I wanted to make sure that I captured that psychology behind her trauma as well as I could, while keeping the story moving forward. And I wanted to make sure that I showed respect to the community, the kink community that I'm a part of. And so, yeah, there are going to be people even within my community who are going to say, well, you know, there's still this, like this negative aspect to the story involving kink. But what I would say to them is, well, look at the consent. There was no consent in those situations. And throughout the book, consent is at the forefront. What it means to Ray, what in her relationships and moving forward from that trauma that she experienced, she really had to learn what consent was. You know, she was trafficked at a younger age, so she had never experienced a relationship where you have those discussions. I understand that there's always going to be pushback. I try not to let it bother me too much, because, you know, there's an audience for a book out there, and sometimes, especially during the Amazon first reads that the book has gone through, a lot of people that are reading it might not necessarily be the audience, the normal audience who would be reading this book. So,
and I only read other people's bad reviews. I don't read mine. It makes me feel better about mine. I could say, look at her. She's got some bad reviews.
Okay. I have to, I admit that too. I do. Oh gosh. I look up huge writers, you know, And I will look at their one star reviews. It is my therapy. That is a form of therapy for me.
So. Yeah, no, because it's
that's so funny.
Yeah, no, but it's more.
I do the same thing.
Yeah. See, this is the truth. Some
writer, but I do it because it's a writer I love, and I go and I read their bad reviews to remember that writers I would give 5-star reviews are getting 1- and 2-star reviews. Does that make any sense? Like, you know, it's like saying you can't take reviews to. You can't take reviews to heart, and your book has to find its true audience, and it takes a while.
and if you get the bad review, you just look up the person that wrote it, then you go after them, you know.
No, you don't do that.
Yeah, you hunt them down, and beat them, you know. Yeah.
There's your killer idea.
Yeah. See, that's how you get true crime books. You know, that's. Oh, well, you know, but it sounds like you're because you're involved in what you're writing about as well in your real life, and you're also very involved with your characters. Like they seem to be, you know, you're hearing them, you're watching the movie, you're living through it. So during the process of writing a book like this, where you're so involved, it's got to have some change on you. How do you think writing this book has changed you?
Yeah, I think it has given me an even better appreciation and understanding of what it means to be a sex worker and the various forms of sex work. I know sex workers, and within my personal life, throughout the process of writing the book, I spoke with professional dominatrixes and even former dominatrixes, including Krista Faust, who the book was dedicated to. She was amazing in helping me really pinpoint what it meant to do that type of work. It also it gave me a better appreciation and understanding of, you know, my own masochism, because I am on the opposite spectrum from Ray. And when I initially got the draft out, I knew it felt a little bit off. It felt good writing the book. I wrote it in very fast. I wrote it in less than 3 months. I think it was about 2.5 months, which is the fastest I've ever written a book. I sent it off to Krista to read, as you know, to help me get a handle on you know, Ray's character. And she was just so vital in getting me on the phone and talking for a very long time and explaining to me basically that I wasn't tapping into her psyche as a dominant person. And it was difficult for me to look at that from the sexuality standpoint. I'm a very dominant person in my daily life. And that kind of seems to be the tendency for a lot of people who are on the submissive or masochistic side of things. So writing a character from that opposite end, I didn't realize how closely connected they really are. That the same enjoyment that I get, you know, with a kink is the same type of enjoyment really that someone on a dominant side would get. So yeah, that was one of the biggest revelations, and it really made me feel even more connected with other people in the community who are on that opposite end, or even on the switch end, meaning someone who has both that dominant and submissive side, which I learned through my research and within my personal life that is probably a better identifier for me.
I didn't realize you talked to John about doing research in the book. You said a dominatrix, right? You called John.
Oh, me?
No, not John.
I would be honored. I'm really interested in, so, you know, you've done a lot of research, but you are ultimately writing a crime novel. And I noticed early on you said, you know, Lou was like, hey, I think you're writing a crime novel here. Talk a little bit about your evolution into the genre. Like, you know, what draws you to crime fiction, you think?
you know, genre in general gets such a bad rap. And I feel like there's so much within our society that is centered around crime, just whether it's a small rural town kind of crime that doesn't make the headlines or those big ones. I feel like crime is always exploring that aspect in writing is a way to really try to understand how that plays out in our own lives every day. Like we become so immune to it. You know, I turn on my phone every morning and start scrolling and my eyes just kind of glaze over from all the information, all the crimes that we see. And I feel like writing about it allows you to really tap into and really hone into the people behind a crime, the understanding. That's what I care about. I care about not so much the crime itself, but how it's affecting someone and the lasting consequences of that. I think that's something that's it's really easy to forget as you're going through your daily life and just trying to, you know, get through work and kids and whatnot, to really forget about, you know, these people walking around, people within your life sometimes that you don't even know have experienced something. So yeah, that's what I look at crime fiction as really a way to understand that, to have a better connection with people in general, and understanding how we can move forward in society with more empathy.
I think that crime is very interesting to me, particularly when you are, you know, dealing with topics like your own or same-sex desire or that kind of thing that has been criminalized in different times and places, as certainly thought of as quote-unquote immoral. And, you know, so crime fiction, you know, in some ways has been this very traditionally kind of very moralistic genre, right? And, you know, it still is, I mean, I think, but how those morals change over time shifts. Do you think, you know, that there's a relationship between the two for you? I think there is for me as a writer, but I'm just curious if that's true for you too.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, especially with what I'm writing, there's still so much taboo around it. You know, a lot of pearl clutching. And one of the areas that I want to focus on is really normalizing that within my writing. And then who knows, 10 years from now, it's not going to be a big deal at all. Like the fact that it is still a big deal to have kink in a book that's not, you know, that's in crime fiction, or it's just so bizarre to me still. But you're seeing more and more of it. I do see more and more books featuring it. I won't say who it is, but I will say one of my friends is writing a book, and we've spoken quite a few times. I don't know if he would want me to say it, so I'm not going to say his name. But we've spoken quite a few times about the book that he's currently writing, and it involves kink. With the character, like how it plays out a pretty big role in the book at some point, and he wanted to get it right, and that was, to me, that was like a moment where I just felt so good that, you know, people are taking more care and representing it just the way that they would, hopefully the way that they would in representing any other group of people, whether it's, you know, people within the LGBTQ community, and people of color and whatnot. So yeah, I feel like 10 years from now, I don't think it's going to be such a big deal, and I'll be focusing on something else, but I'll probably still always have kink aspects in my work, because that's just who I am. But there will always be the dark aspects, in my work. I don't know how to write something light and fluffy, so I want to. I wish I could.
At the end of the day, like when underneath all of the beating going on in the book. Is there a subtext? Do you have a meaning or something you want people to get out of the book? Is there something you want the reader to take away?
That no matter what you've been through in life, you know, and whether or not you have a you know, the family, quote unquote family, there's a way to get through it. There's, you know, resilience is the overarching theme, and having that found family. You know, I think as someone who's also queer, I'm bisexual. So yeah, it's I definitely have had to have a lot of found family living in a red state. So I definitely I think that's the overarching theme and what I want people to get out of it.
Well, it's an interesting subject and stuff, area and stuff. What do you kind of got going on now? Are you going to continue this type of writing?
I just finished up the draft of my next book, This Violent Heart, which actually does go into a character who's bisexual, and her guilt over believing that she contributed to her best friend, first love's suicide. So I just finished up that draft. It was the first time I wrote a book on contract, and that is also through Amazon. That will be coming out in 2025, around the same time as like Hurt for Me this year. So probably around February. I can't remember the exact day, but it was February next year. And then I will be working on my next book, which is going to focus on the burlesque world. I love burlesque. I've always been fascinated with burlesque. And that is, if you go on my Instagram, you see a lot of posts that I do about burlesque, the local burlesque scene. So that is pretty much what I'm doing about every month, is going to burlesque shows. And so I will be taking some burlesque courses and kind of really immersing myself into that world a little bit more. And I'm, looking forward to that. So that will be taking place more in the city. I'll be back in the city, whereas This Violent Heart takes place in a rural Oklahoma town that is just a made-up town, but it's kind of like the every Oklahoma town, rural town.
Wait a minute. You said burlesque. So there's actually burlesque going on in Oklahoma?
Oh yeah. We have a thriving burlesque scene here. We have my favorite here in Oklahoma City is Terre Rouge Burlesque. You can follow them. There's the Despo Dolls, and there's the whole Tulsa scene. But yeah, they just had the second annual Weirdlesque Festival, which is a 3-day burlesque festival that encompasses nerdlesque, fetish, cosplay, traditional burlesque, like classic burlesque. But yeah, it's huge.
I just thought they were cowboys. What's going on here?
Well, I think you need to visit Oklahoma, huh?
You must have.
You've got to come up with a city.
Well, you must have done some research, but also to get into the, you were talking about, Ray being trafficked and stuff like that. Did you do a little bit of research in that area?
Yeah, I sure did. And that was a lot of, reading in-depth articles, reading, survivors, reading their stories. I wanted to really kind of capture that voice of what it would mean. Like not this sort of crossing the border kind of thing, what we always hear, like it's, it happens within the country. Like, Ed Amar, he wrote a great book. Yeah. There are a lot of great writers who have covered trafficking in more detail. But it was, I wanted to have that part of Ray's life. So you see that transition from her being this, broken person who, does not know what having consensual sex means, or, that aspect of her life. So yeah, I tried to do as much research as I could. I wish I could have spoken. I did speak with someone who, has done sex work, which is, not the same thing, but obviously, but they had experienced some negative things within that work. But yeah, I do wish that I could have spoken directly with someone who had gone through that. But yeah, I try to do as much as I could.
Do you think, you know, I'm thinking sort of thematically about your work as a whole, and I mean, it feels like one through line is this idea of consent, and particularly a woman having consent over her body. Do you think this has, you know, I'm sure you're, of course, you're writing from your personal point of view, but I can't help but sort of think about this conversation in this day and age, where the, you know, question of, you know, consent and, you know, the political fights going on around a woman's body are hard to miss. Is this resonating? Do you think about that a lot as you're writing, or is this more like maybe in the background?
Yeah, I do think about it. I think it's hard as a woman for those issues not to be in the background constantly in our lives. Like, you know, just like I think about the fact that, okay, yeah, I've had two children. I was able to plan it out, and that was great. But that is not the case for a lot of women. And I live in a state where it is, you know, it's like outlawed now, like just outright. So it's a scary thing being a mother of a daughter who is about to be an adult and knowing that she's going to be, that she's, this is her world. And even though it may not impact me the same way it is impacting people I love. So yeah, that's always in the back of my mind. And I know that some of the pushback that I have had on this book is, you know, kind of bringing some of those things to the forefront. And then some people who, you know, are like, it can't be like that. I'm like, yeah, it really is like that. It really is. But I think, you know, sometimes when people are reading and they see a writer kind of pushing some issues and they're like, well, they're just pushing their own personal issues. I'm like, you know, sometimes that's what you do. But it's not just they're not things that are just important to me. They are things that are important to my character. If it wasn't important to Ray, then I would not be writing about it. So that's how I look at that. And I just, you know, I haven't written a female character, a woman character who is not very strong in their personal beliefs of having bodily autonomy. I don't think I ever will write a character who does not believe in that, who doesn't believe the importance of that. I'm sure there are plenty of other writers who would write something like that. And they can read that.
Right. Exactly. Right. You know, let's get back to that finding your audience kind of thing. It's really interesting though, that question. And I don't know if you confronted this a lot, that, you know, the confusion over the author and their characters. Right. And I like what you just said about this is, yes, I may share some beliefs or points of view with my characters, but that doesn't mean we're exactly the same or something. Do you ever sort of, I guess, maybe worry about that or have run into that confusion? And does it bug you or, I don't know, what do you think?
The confusion within myself?
Confusion between, like, a reader thinking, you know, basically equating you to your character.
Yeah, you know, I've definitely run into that. Like, well, especially for in Walking Through Needles, you know, I had a lot of people who thought I was condoning certain things. There's, you know, obviously sexual abuse that goes on in that book between a sadist and a masochist. And I'm like, wow, and I can always tell when people have not read through an entire book, who have not finished the book, they probably got to like a certain point in the book and they probably thought that, okay, I can't do it. I can't do it anymore. But if they continue reading, then they would, you know, clearly know that part of the book, that horrible part of the book, that this character goes through is vital to understanding the difference between what is the right way to approach that in their sexuality and the wrong way. And that's the same way with hurt for me. There's, you know, people who are this, you know, a group who are doing horrible things and it involves kink, but there's no consent. And then you've got Ray's world where consent is, you know, that's the number one rule, and everybody's on board, and they know what's going to happen. And so, yeah, there's a big difference there. And so, yeah, it's difficult whenever I get a comment like that, you know, or email or something when someone's like, "Are you condoning this?" And I'm like, no, I'm not condoning that those kinds of abuses at all, which is very clear when you read the book, I would hope. Right. And if it's not, I don't know. Like, I try to make that as clear as possible, but you can't change how people are going to look at something, especially if they're not going to do their diligence in actually reading the book completely. But yeah, I get it. Like, some topics are just too heavy. I do wish that with Walking Through Needles that I would have had, like, I have trigger warnings on my Goodreads page, but I did not have trigger warnings. I was so new at this as a writer, I didn't think about that, and it wasn't something that was kind of presented to me. So I did not think about that until after the fact. And then that's why with Hurt For Me, I have lots of trigger warnings. I have, you know, everything laid out in front, and same thing going forward. You know, probably years ago, I used to be of the mind that what does it matter on a trigger warning? Because I'm one of those people, it takes a lot. Like, really, there's not much that gets to me with reading. I read very dark stuff. I get bothered with abusive children on the page. So that's like probably one of the hard limits that I have. I don't like animal abuse. So things like that, where it gets into really, it becomes really gratuitous. But even so, I've never felt like, oh, I really wish I would have had a trigger warning. But as a writer, I want to make sure that I give that, I have that for my readers going forward, and because some people need it, they really do. And yeah, I want them to know up front what they're getting into. And if it's too much, then they know right off the bat.
Yeah. Otherwise, you end up like me. I'll be all disturbed. Totally. So listen, so now that you've got this going, did you do social media? Do you have a website? How do you like readers to interact with you?
They can follow me on Instagram, and I still call it Twitter. I don't care. It's Twitter. At Heather L. Levy. And then my website is heatherlevywriter.com. And they can interact with me, get updates on my website. They can even send me lovely messages only. But I just had a request from a school, from a university the other day, who was starting a kink library, like a kinky library within the university. It's a private university, and they wanted to see if I could donate some books to them. They wanted it to be a safe place for people to talk about sex and consent, and I just thought that was amazing. And I was like, well, heck yeah, I can.
Yeah. So, yeah,
that gives me a lot of hope. That gives me a lot of hope for higher education.
Yeah. Just let me guess, it wasn't in Florida.
No.
Well, let's try it.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Now, of course, the book is called Hurt For Me, and our guest is the author of that book, Heather Levy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much. You guys were great to talk with.
Thanks, Heather.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.